Hello, Josh, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Maybe we can just start by telling us what and who the Shaq Seven are and why they went to trial.
Well, the Shaq Seven are six human descendants and one corporation, which was Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty, who were indicted under terrorism laws back in 2004. We had all been part of a campaign against a contract research organization called Huntington Life Sciences. And that campaign had taken the world's second biggest contract research organization. They're a giant multinational, and we had reduced their stock price at one point to 1/1000th of a penny, down from about $40 per share. So clearly we were a threat to the financial world, and so now we see the true face of the war on terrorism as a bunch of animal rights activists have their homes raided by joint terrorism task forces, and as the Department of Homeland Security comes and rounds us up at 6 a.m.
Stop Huntington, of course, is an international campaign, and which started, I believe, in the U.K., right?
It started in the United Kingdom, I believe, back in 1999.
Yeah.
And came here to the United States in 2001. Over in England, Huntington Life Science had been doing their banking with a company called Royal Bank of Scotland. And after a pressure campaign that took place, I believe, in about six different countries, Royal Bank of Scotland not only stopped doing banking for Huntington Life Sciences, but also sold their loan facility to a United States corporation called Stevens Incorporated. And so the campaign came here, and that was one of the really brilliant things about the campaign, is that it really didn't know any boundaries. It showed the corporate world that no matter where they ran, no matter where they went to, that they were going to be held accountable for the things that they did. And so, again, here we are.
So, exactly, and because you guys were based in New Jersey, right? And there is a Huntington lab there, isn't there?
There's a lab in East Millstone, New Jersey, but I myself was active in Seattle. Some of the other defendants in this case were active in Long Island, New York, and all the way down into Northern California. There were small little anti-HLS groups all across the United States, because the tactics of Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty and other similar groups weren't to just target the lab itself. We wanted to do away with the idea that you could make change by standing outside of an empty building on weekends, like yelling at bricks and mortar. And so what we began to do is we began to look at the financial structure and the other pillars of support that Huntington Life Sciences had, such as, for example, their insurance company, market makers, brokers who sold their stock, and so on and so on. And so this makes the campaign much, much wider, of course, because these folks and their businesses exist in every major city across the United States and, indeed, all across the world. And so that gave the campaign a real chance to blossom and grow, because now instead of just having a few folks in East Millstone, New Jersey campaigning against HLS, you can have tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of people across the world pressuring these financial support structures.
Yeah, and it was very effective too, like you were saying. So what happened in the case, and maybe you can describe the charges that the state brought against you and how they were able to force this on you.
Well, it's a pretty depressing story. After September 11th, 2001, Congress took an old law, which was known as the Animal Enterprise Protection Act, and they tacked it on to the Patriot Act and called it the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. And the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act basically punishes people for thought crime, because if I were to, say, run a campaign against Nike for their child labor practices, and I were to use the exact same tactics that we used in the Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty campaign, those tactics would have been legal. But because we were doing it to further the cause of animal liberation, now suddenly the very same tactics that applied to another ethical cause, they suddenly become illegal. And so we weren't charged with actual animal enterprise terrorism. We were charged with conspiracy to commit animal enterprise terrorism. And for me, what that meant was, for example, 5 out of the 8 years that I'm facing come from the final 2 minutes of a speech I made in front of 7 people, where in the final 2 minutes I talked about how to repeatedly send black sheets of paper through a fax machine. I didn't provide people with numbers to send it to. I didn't recommend targets. I didn't provide them with sheets of black paper. But thanks to the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, that 2 minutes of speaking was taken as a conspiracy to cause financial harm to an animal enterprise.
Yeah, that's wild. I was actually looking at the website, and they called it conspiracy to harass using a telecommunications device.
The conspiracy to harass using a telecommunications device expands well beyond just the black faxing charge. It also goes into encouraging people to call companies, to send emails to companies, and again, not even to send repeated communications or threatening communications, but just the government is claiming that we solicited phone calls and faxes and emails in such volume that it became a financial burden to these companies and therefore was illegal. So essentially, we're being punished for having a popular campaign.
Uh-huh. Which is also something that's advocated not by radicals or anything like that, but that's something that you could see advocated, sorry about that, advocated by church groups or something like that, but it seems to be playing into something that I know in the States a lot of people talk about, the Green Scare. And the ability to target, in particular, animal rights activists with really draconian laws and charge them and throw them in jail for extended periods of time. And in Canada, there hasn't really been anything at all. I think the Trey Arrow thing is probably the most radical thing that's happening here in terms of repression of activists directly for activism, and that's obviously tied into the States. But Canada's always seems to be a couple years behind the U.S. in a lot of social policies, economic policies, and so I was wondering if you could describe exactly what's happening in the Green Scare and how it's targeting activism and how the social justice movement should really take note of what the tactics and the strategy of the state is in how they're targeting a fringe group first with perhaps a larger strategy behind that.
Well, first of all, don't underestimate the authorities up there in Canada, because there's been a number of attacks on animal rights activists up there over the years. One famous example I can think of happened just over, I guess, about 10 years ago now, in which a group of activists with an organization called Bear Watch were attacked by hunters directly in front of an RCMP station. And the RCMP locked their doors and wouldn't answer their phones as activists were trying to call in on their cell phones. So America definitely doesn't have any sort of monopoly on police and federal agent abuse. But here in the U.S., what we first saw, and again, we knew this was coming for a while now. This is history repeating itself. We saw a long period of marginalization of our movement, where any time an FBI agent or a police officer would get a chance to speak to the media about activists, no matter what had occurred, let's say you would have a sit-in outside of a store that sold fur, or people locking down to a company that did animal testing, the word that we would constantly see used was terrorism. And then about in 2001 and 2002, what we began to see repeated over and over and over again was that animal rights activists and environmentalists were the nation's number one domestic terrorist threat. If we look back to the 1970s, of course, during the COINTELPRO era, where Black Panthers were being assassinated by police officers and FBI agents all across our country, you know, J. Edgar Hoover at one point said that the Black Panthers were the greatest internal threat to domestic security. Mm-hmm. And so we knew, you know, that was definitely warning us of what was to come. And then more and more laws started being passed by industry groups all around the country, United Sportsmen's Alliance and so on. They were lobbying to have, you know, all sorts of things that were previously legal tactics, illegalized, or to have things that were really minor in terms of vandalism, spray painting, broken windows, to turn those things into crimes that wouldn't just carry, say, a few months as far as a sentence goes, but now to carry several years. In the HLS campaign, for example, there's a wonderful activist by the name of Benjamin Persky who served almost, I believe, 2.5 years on Rikers, one of our nation's worst prisons, for breaking two windows. 2.5 years for two windows. And so that, you know, that was sort of the kickoff to the process. And then, of course, now it's just in full swing, where you have people who are accused of causing tens of thousands of dollars worth of damages to buildings, but of harming no one, and they're facing life in prison. And in fact, an activist who I had worked with for a number of years and who I had been close friends with is right now, I believe, facing a mandatory minimum of 37 years for helping to shut down a horse slaughterhouse.
It's really interesting, especially in the media up here. We have a major news organization called CanWest, you might be familiar with, have really taken to the label eco-terrorist to try and marginalize animal rights activists, which is part of that exact kind of green scare that you're talking about.
Yes. The thing is that, you know, news, major news organizations in capitalist countries, of course, they need to make money, and using the term eco-terrorists is a hell of a lot more sensational than calling people what they are.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and of course that plays right into the state's hands. I mean, here we have the institutions that, you know, basically help people create their opinions, and they're all against us.
Okay, before I let you go, I know you got to run. Could you just give a brief update on the appeal, the sentencing, and maybe your website information and stuff so that people can get up to speed?
Certainly.
If that's possible to wrap up that quick.
Well, I guess the first thing is the appeal. Basically, one of the things that is enshrined into U.S. appellate law is that juries do not understand the First Amendment, which is supposed to guarantee us freedom of speech. And that's why every famous American First Amendment case is an appellate case. And so for us, we pretty much knew one way or the other that, you know, we would probably be convicted at the trial level. We didn't know that the prosecutor would play as dirty as he did. We didn't know that, you know, he would do things like out one of my co-defendants as being gay as a way to prejudice the jury against him, or, you know, a lot of the other dirty tactics he used. But anyway, thanks to an outpouring of support from all across the U.S., we finally have good lawyers. Initially, a lot of us had appointed attorneys because, you know, we're poor activists. We couldn't hire private counsel. But I think a lot of people after this conviction were kind of woken up to the direction this country is heading, and they wanted to make sure that this appeal was going to be as strong as it could possibly be. So thanks to that, pretty soon the appeals process will start up. I guess the other thing is if people would like to support us, to write us letters in jail, to send us books and so on, all of the information for that is available online at www.shack7, that's S-H-A-C, and the number 7.com. And so folks can find ways to support us there, read more about the case, and even download and print out literature to pass around and help inform people about what's happening to us.
For sure. Okay, great. Thanks a lot for joining us, Josh. I know it's a tough time for you.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. All the best. Bye.
All right. Thank you.